Welcome, everyone. I think tonight is the first night that it's been dark. There's always been some sunshine. This is the first week. So it's really fall now. It's probably one of my favorite, very favorite times of the year. So tonight's talk begins with a reading by the late physicist Stephen Hawking. One of the basic rules of the universe is that nothing is perfect. Perfection simply doesn't exist. Without imperfection, neither you nor I would exist. The question that was asked of me for tonight's talk, and there's going to be two parts to tonight. I'm going to address, Sally's question. I'm going to address Sally's question, and then I'm going to talk about our upcoming Great Fast and the meaning of that. I'm going to tie them together, hopefully. She asked, "Dear Sensei, I'm feeling really stressed out because of all the expectations that people have. What can I do?" So one of the things that I find most useful about our approach to the way of mindful living in the utilization of the four directions system is that thoughts are understood to be the basis for how we feel and often how we act, and that there's an interdependent relationship between the thoughts and beliefs that we have and the feelings and the actions and the consequences that flow from them. So when you're asked a question like this, one of the easiest things you can do is go into the very structure of the thought. So here, you know, the thought is written out, and that's always a good practice to do, is to, you know, get your thoughts out of your head, share them with others that you trust, and if not, by yourself, write them down. Because it's a good way of getting everything out so that you're not holding anything in and you don't get into any kind of repression. So if we look at her question, it says, she's saying essentially that she's really stressed because of the expectation of other people. Now, the first thing I would say about this is that that's not what's causing her stress. Bless you, Gesundheit. That's not what's causing her stress. What's causing her stress is herself. And it's a basic error that we make before we awaken to a more enlightened lifestyle. We have a tendency to think that whatever problems we're having, that those are coming from outside of us. As long as we believe that our problems are coming outside of us, they're coming from others, we'll never be free. Will never be free, because whatever prison you, whatever jail cell you find yourself in, as long as you think that it's coming from others, then that jail cell is locked from the outside. At least that's what you think. But when you awaken, you realize that the jail cell is locked only from the inside, not from the outside. And you realize that the outside world, you have very little control over. You can try to influence it, you can try to manipulate it at times, but ultimately, there's so many different variables going on that it's a fool's errand. And so that's the first thing that, Sally, I would say to be very clear, is that it's not the expectations of others that's causing you suffering. It's yourself. Now, what do I mean by that more specifically? Well, because the basic Buddhist theory is that with our thoughts, we create our experience of life. We look at what we mean by expectations. So generally what that means when someone says something like this is that they have a view of themselves, perhaps an idealized view of themselves. And then it comes into conflict with the view of others. Or we have a secret view of ourselves that we don't really share with anyone else. And we constantly feel like we have to put on some kind of show for others to accept us. And in my experience over the last 3 decades, that's the two reasons why we say things like this. So what do we have to do? Well, we have to look at a conditioning element that I consider the most pernicious problem that humans deal with on a daily pedestrian basis. And that is the idea of perfectionism. It's the idea or the belief, it's an ideal that there is something perfect. Now, I'm always careful to say, I don't mean then that you can't use the word perfect, although I'm very careful about the word that I use. And when I say something is perfect, I'm referring to it poetically. But what I really mean is that it's complete. So if I see a sunset over the ocean, I might say that's the perfect sunset. But I know that I'm not taking that literally. I'm not talking about something that's meant to be taken literally. Perfectionism is not that. Perfectionism is a conditioning element within us that makes us believe that we have to constantly be seeking something outside of ourselves, some idealized view of ourselves, and that we're constantly either feeling like we aren't quite there yet, or we get close to it. And then we're afraid we're going to lose it. So either way, it's a very stressful scenario. And once we realize, as Stephen Hawking made clear from us from a cosmic perspective, that there is no such thing, then we can begin to construct another belief system. Because you can't get rid of something and not replace it. Nature abhors a vacuum. And that's true for the psyche as well as it is true for any other aspect of nature. And so we have to replace that view with another one. We have to replace the goal with one that is achievable. And it's interesting because the very words that Mr. Hawking used are really to the point that if everything was perfect, then there'd be no room for anything new because change could not exist in a perfect state. It would be a static state. And the universe doesn't function that way. And so therefore, because it doesn't function that way, following the second principle, oneness, it allows for new things to come into being. It allows for us to exist. It allows for us to create new ways of being and doing. So what do we replace perfectionism with? Well, first we have to wrestle with it because it's a tough one. It's one that's been conditioned in us, and it's a leftover sort of mismatch with where we are now from our early evolution, where we are being driven solely by survival. But we're not driven solely by survival anymore. So that old drive that got moved from survivalism into perfectionism when creatures develop big frontal lobes and big brains, that is the very thing we must carefully deconstruct. And then we must replace it with something that is achievable, a completeness, a wholeness, a oneness that we can all experience. And once we shift that away from perfection to this idea of being at one with ourselves, this idea of wholeness, then we realize that this new goal of oneness or wholeness is made up of two energies that are dynamically together. And that is understood in the ancient Chinese language as yin and yang. And it's understood that they're not a duality, but they're a dynamic, each participating in the other. And that is the very basis or the way of life, of the universe. And so our goal is to be in harmony, to be in balance, to find balance in our life. I would say in some sense, you could sum up the entirety of our practice as finding balance. My son and I and my wife, we've been enjoying the continuation of the Karate Kid universe with the Cobra Kai TV series, which I highly recommend to everyone. And I'm excitedly waiting for the January 3rd season. It's a beautiful exploration of this yin and yang between the two main characters. But in those movies and in the series, that was the constant refrain of Daniel's sensei. You must find balance. You have to find balance in your life. And that's possible. That's achievable. What does that mean to find balance? Well, in our mindfulness model, perfection and wholeness, which you can find in the book Free Your Mind, you can also find it in the Three Principles of Oneness. It's made up of those two parts, and those two parts are harmony and integrity. Now, what do we mean by integrity? It means that we have to learn to integrate everything in our life. And that's where the imperfection that Hawking talks about comes in. We have to learn to integrate the good, the bad, and the ugly, and leave nothing out, nothing unseen, nothing hidden, everything brought out into the light of awareness. And when we do that, we realize we have a choice with regard to how we're going to be in harmony with those different aspects or elements of our personality in our life. And we do that by integrating them in a way that's harmonious for us, that creates balance for us. So if you imagine your life like a big pizza pie, each slice has a different emphasis. And for a lot of people, the biggest slices in their life are the things that are creating them suffering. But the beauty is we get to choose how big that slice is going to be. Even if it's something really difficult, we get to decide how big a piece of that pie it takes up. And once we realize that we have the freedom and the power to do this, then we begin to deal with ourselves more realistically and more honestly. So, with regard to Sally's question, bringing it back to that, once I realized that I can't be perfect, and that if there were perfection, I wouldn't exist, and neither would you. But because it does, I can create anew. And so what I can do is I can examine myself. I can reflect and see how much of my persona or how much of my sense of identity is wrapped up in someone else's idea of perfection. And once I learn to cut through the delusion of that, with the sword of wisdom, and I bind it up with compassion, and I harmonize with it through compassion, I then can choose to see myself not from the perspective of perfection, but from the perspective of wholeness, where everything I need, I already have, and that nothing outside of me will ever, ever make me complete. Because that wholeness, that oneness is already there. All I have to do is wake up to it and then nurture that new identity, that new sense of being, and that new goal of wholeness. And when I do that, sometimes people on the outside will find that I'm not fitting what they need or want from me. And it doesn't mean I don't have to care about it. And it doesn't mean that I don't find ways to skillfully work with it. It just means I'm no longer letting someone else define who I am. And once I do that, I can carry the expectations of others differently. And I can be more balanced in what my expectations of others are as well. I can look at the expectation that someone might have of me, and I can say, well, that's an expectation. That's a sense of responsibility that I am committed to. For example, when my son was born, he had every right to have a sense of expectation that I would be there and that I would try to be there for him in the best way that I could. When I married my wife, she had every right to have a sense of expectation that I would be a good partner. And so, that kind of expectation, I can say yes to. But the kind of expectation that I cannot say yes to, in fact, I should learn to say no to, is when others' expectations of me begin to cause me to live not out of my true self, but to live out of some false ego self. And so I can learn to say no to some of the expectations that people might place on me. And that's what clarity gives us. It gives us the ability to find balance. Some things we say yes, some things we say no. And even with the things that we say yes to, there's no perfection. So ultimately, people will think that you let them down. I don't know about you, but I think one of the most common experiences I have is the idea that other people let me down. And when I feel that they've let me down, it's because I'm comparing them to what I would do, at least in my ideal sense of myself. But the reality is, I let other people down too, even without trying, without that being my intention. And so that's an experience we all have of each other. You might not think you've ever let anybody down. You might not think that anyone thinks that of you. I got news for you. It's not true. But again, it doesn't put us into a bind because we realize we cannot be perfect. We can pursue excellence, which is what I consider wholeness. It's bringing in all the aspects of my life, integrating them in a way that is harmonious. And so when I don't meet someone's expectations, I don't allow that to affect my sense of self-estimation. If I care about that person, I'm going to care about how they're feeling and how they're thinking, but I can't control that. And I can't live out of that. I just simply can't. Now, how does that relate to what we're going to be observing next week? Next week begins the kickoff, if you will, or the beginning of our liturgical cycle. And if you get the Book of Common Meditation, you'll find all of those here. And we begin this liturgical cycle with the fast of healing and reconciliation. Some of our ceremonies are fasts, some are feasts, most are feasts. But this great one that kicks off the year, that begins our cycle of practice, this one is the fast of healing and reconciliation. Now, the Japanese word for it is sagaki, or the sagaki. And it means the feeding of the hungry ghost. The feeding of the hungry ghost. And when we observe that on the 27th, I believe, we will be doing so with a fire ceremony, a goma, and because of the circumstances, we probably won't be doing it outside. We'll probably be doing it here with a few of the folks, a few of the clergy and so forth. And I would heartily encourage you in your home to have a way to observe this fire ritual. Now, what we do in this fire ritual is, and this is why I want you to kind of have a week at least to sort of prepare for, is we're learning to let go. We're learning to let go of the expectations of others, the expectations of the past, so that we can enter into the present with a clean slate, a clean start. There's a parable that you will find by the Buddha and also in the New Testament that relates to this. The parable of the Buddha is that when we commit and connect to a ceremony like the feeding of the hungry ghosts, what we're doing is we're deciding which seeds we're going to nourish. Because there's a lot of seeds in the psyche. And part of the sagaki is learning that we're basically going to burn up those areas. We're going to burn up those grounds that are filled with seeds of discontent, seeds of a sense of failure, seeds of a sense of sin, those fields of pain. And then we're going to spend the rest of the practice year nurturing those seeds that bring us wisdom, bring us compassion. But we're going to intentionally do that. And it's a beautiful and powerful ceremony, and it's a healing ceremony. And in it, we reconcile. What are we reconciling? We're reconciling this idea of the ego self with the true self. And we're allowing the true self to to become our new center, our new foundation. So I would encourage you to do several things. First, look up in one of the books the teaching around perfectionism and realize that you are the source of your suffering, not others. Others can cause you pain. Life can be very painful. But it's the ideas and beliefs and thoughts we attach to those painful experiences that create suffering. We don't have to suffer. We can't escape the pain. And honestly, if you've lived long enough, you realize you don't really want to, because it's part and parcel of being a human being. But you can choose to stop suffering. And it's a choice that you make. I had an experience a couple weeks back where I had something not work out the way I wanted, and I could feel this whole, you know, all these ghosts coming out. All these ghosts coming out to haunt me. You know what I mean? When one thing goes wrong, then there's all these ghosts that come out to tell you why it's wrong. And then they start pointing out everything that ever went wrong. And before long, you're in this haunted house. And it's at those points, and my wife and son were with me so they can tell you, that you have to say no. Where I said about yes and no. Learning to say no. Learning to say no to that condition. Learning to say no is very powerful. Saying no to that conditioning, and I know how it's this house, this haunted house is built, and I will no longer support it. And when you do that, when you commit to that, and it takes courage. It all drops away. It all drops away. And you're filled with a sense of not knowing and bearing witness to the moment. And it's beautiful. And you don't suffer. If anything, the opposite happens. You experience happiness. You experience freedom. So, Sally, I hope you find that useful, and I hope all of you out there, if you feel like you're being stressed from the expectations of others, realize quietly in your own practice that it's not coming from them, that it's coming from you. And the cell door to every jail you put yourself in is locked from the inside.